This is the Sports Animals.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to another episode of the Sports Animals. Harry, the Yankees won a baseball game this afternoon, and nobody gives a shit because the sky is falling. How are you this afternoon?
Oh, man. He comes in hot. This is a trade deadline special, and Mike, I'm here to counsel you through this. I don't want you, you know, I know you're a very emotional guy, and I just want to be the voice of reason to talk you through that the Yankees are still one of the best teams in baseball.
One of the best teams, but no longer even in the conversation for the best team in the American League after a jam-packed trade deadline where the Yankees acquired something that sounds like a combination of an Italian dish and a burrito in our friend Alfredo Garcia, who came over in a trade with the Rockies for somebody named Joe Harvey. So really excited.
Joseph Harvey, he had the rec specs.
Really excited that the Yankees have made one World Series appearance in 17 years, and everybody continues to call Brian Cashman the greatest GM in the history of the sport. But I digress. You have a team that's on pace to win 105 games. You can't figure out how to address a single need that this team has. You can't get a reliever. You can't get a starter. You can't do anything except our Italian dish, Mexican burrito thing. Alfredo Garcia.
I don't know where to start with this. As you can hear, I opened my beer of the week a little early this week because it's going to be tough to get through this show with a manic, depressive you over there.
Is that an official diagnosis? Because you told me you were going to be my therapist this evening.
Yeah, I think that's official. I mean, the Yankees won a game today, and they're still on pace to be neck and neck with the Dodgers and Astros as one of the best teams in baseball. And it was a disappointing deadline. It seems like the Yankees just couldn't find a trade partner, but I don't really know the move that the Yankee fans wanted the Yankees to make. So my point is, yes, the Yankees went fishing for starters. They couldn't find one. And that's okay. They have the pieces on this team to win a World Series. They have guys that are on the IL that when they come back will make this the deepest team in the playoffs. Yes, would I have liked them to add a starter? Of course. Would I have liked them to add a bullpen piece? Sure. But if the asking price was too high and it was going to mortgage your future, I'm okay with Cashman declining some of these offers.
So let's think about that for a second, right? Because I think if you look at some of the trades that did happen at this deadline, it's fair to speculate whether Brian Cashman missed some serious opportunities. And there are two trades that jump out in particular. Obviously, there was the blockbuster this afternoon, and we'll get to that in a moment. But yesterday,
Why don't you start with that one?
Well, because I think, all right, fine. We can start with that one if you want. So Zach Greinke, obviously from the Diamondbacks to the Astros this afternoon, as a part of two trades that the Astros made today. They also acquired Aaron Sanchez from the Toronto Blue Jays, and I believe they acquired one additional pitcher,
Joe Biagini,
a right-handed relief pitcher from the
Toronto
Blue Jays.
He's pretty good. That's actually a good addition.
He is pretty good. Aaron Sanchez is a high spin rate guy who is a failed starter in Toronto, and he's got a good fastball, a good curveball. If they take away his other pitches from him and then have him come out of the bullpen and kind of give up on his role as a starter, which they absolutely can now that they have the best 1-2-3 rotation in baseball this year, maybe in baseball in the last 5 years, maybe in the last 10. I don't know if a lot of teams have a better 1-2-3.
Classic.
Verlander, Gerrit Cole, and Zach Greinke 1-3. You can take a roll of the dice on a buy low guy like Aaron Sanchez when you have that kind of a 1-3. So the Yankees are going to tell you, Harry, that the asking prices were too high for a starting pitcher and they were too high for a reliever, and yet the Astros figured out how to get a starting pitcher and two relievers at the deadline, while we got nothing. Bupkis.
Yeah. So first of all, Greinke was not on the table for us. So he had a full no trade clause that specifically said, sorry, a limited no trade clause specifically said, I do not want to go to the New York Yankees. And everyone who had talked to him said that he would have declined any deal to New York. He doesn't like New York. He doesn't have the makeup for New York. So that wasn't really on the table. I don't know what Yankee fans want there. They weren't able to get Zach Greinke because Zach Greinke doesn't want to come here. So to me, that's not like a missed opportunity from Ryan Cashman.
Yeah, but no relievers either. I mean, clearly Aaron Sanchez and Joe Biagini were on the table, and the Yankees need pitching help. Any one of those arms would be better than nothing in my mind.
Yeah, okay. So looking at this market, there clearly was not much out there for the Yankees in terms of starting pitching. Madison Bumgarner wasn't really available. Noah Syndergaard, Zach Wheeler, the Mets were never going to trade him to the crosstown rivals. It just wasn't going to happen. Stroman, they probably asked for a lot for Stroman because he's in division and they don't want to face him next year. I know that the Mets got Stroman for two pitching prospects, and it seems like a reasonable...
Double A and single A. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but in the division, they probably asked for a lot more because they're going to be facing the Yankees a lot next year and they want to be competitive next year. So you don't know what was proposed, but to me, the Zach Greinke deal, first of all, he was never available for New York. It would never have happened. And two, this guy has a lot of question marks. He's going to be a World Series contender. He's going to help them in the playoffs this year. But the guy is turning 36 before the season ends. He has 37 and 38-year-old seasons under contract for $32 million. $32 million. That's one-third of your payroll is going to be going towards a 37-year-old pitcher. That scares me. I'm not sure I want to sign up for that. Plus,
I think the Diamondbacks ate $24 million on the deal. So
yeah, so you're still paying him $25 million for starting pitch.
We're paying Masahiro Tanaka 26 right now. That's not that much money.
I mean, it's Zach Greinke, they can no longer re-sign Gerrit Cole. They now have to have no chance of re-signing Gerrit Cole. Is that what you want to do?
I mean, are we going to sign Gerrit Cole? I mean, it seems like in the last 5 years, Brian Cashman has become allergic to big-time arms. I don't really know what else to make of it other than that. So if you're telling me that the downstream effect of this is that maybe we get Gerrit Cole for next year, okay, I guess I can live with that. But there were players available at the deadline. I mean, the Stroman deal, I get the idea that he may have been more expensive in the division. I'll grant you that. Let's take a look at the Indians deal with Bauer going for Puig in the three-team trade there. First of all, can you imagine the GMs on the phone for that deal? You know, Cleveland's call up the Cincinnati Reds and say, hey, we're pretty tired of our asshole, and we're kind of thinking that maybe you're tired of your asshole. Can we just trade because you know, we can't stand this Bauer guy any longer. He just threw a ball over the center field fence on Sunday. And Puig certainly looks like a handful, but, you know, maybe just a change of scenery for both of them would do everybody some good. What do you think, right?
And then as the deal is going down, Puig gets into a brawl, punches.
Just swinging at people. So he's probably going to be suspended for the first 7 or 8 games that he's in Cleveland now, too.
Yeah. We'll throw in Puig and a suspension to be named later.
Yeah. Did you see what Tito said to Bauer when he threw the ball over the fence on Sunday?
No, what he said.
So Bauer gets angry, throws the ball up the center field fence. Tito just comes up, shakes his head, looks at him and goes, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" And Bauer like patted him on the chest and was like, you know what? My bad. I'm really sorry. That one's on me." Like, first of all, okay. That was kind of amazing watching a guy throw the ball over the center field fence from the pitcher's mound, but also what a psycho, I guess, at the same time.
Yeah. He is a handful, but he's also a very good pitcher. And yeah, he was a guy that I thought was a top target. Yankees seemed to eliminate him pretty early because they thought he had character issues. Right. And I'm not sure the Indians, this is the thing, all the AL teams that had pitchers, why do you want to trade your starting pitcher to the Yankees when you're going to be playing them in the playoffs?
No, I get it. I get it. And maybe the Indians would have never done a deal with the Yankees. That's possible. But if the asking price was Yasiel Puig and the other outfielder that they got, then you would think that the Yankees could have put together a pretty compelling offer that was focused around Clint Frazier and Estevan Florial. And I would have been really happy to have gotten something if we could build it around a package like that, because the Yankees could have offered a package that was very comparable to what the Indians wound up getting in that Bauer deal.
I got to say, the Indians got a haul. That was a serious haul. They got Franmil Reyes, who's actually quietly had a 27 home run season as a 24-year-old. Now, he's not the best outfielder. He might have to be moved to DH.
But they've got an open spot at DH, too.
Yeah, so that's a guy you have under control through 2024. That's a really good young player you got in return. You get Puig, who's going to help you this season, and then you get three prospects, one of them a top 100 prospect. That is a serious haul for the Indians. I think they made out like bandits there. What are the Padres doing in that deal? Like, they gave up two good young players for a prospect from the Reds. Like, what? That makes no sense. So I thought it was I love that blockbuster deal. The Reds, I guess, are really going for it in 2020. I think they got the Mets syndrome, where they're totally delusional that they're going to be World Series contenders in 2020. But it was a very strange deal, and it was a strange deadline. Like, there just wasn't a clear group of buyers and sellers like most years. And that's why you saw teams like the Mets and Reds get the top pieces out there.
Yeah, there's something about coming up totally empty in a season like this, where the team has been so good. It just sends such a terrible message to your clubhouse that you're not going to double down. I mean, the Braves acquired Shane Green, and I know Shane Green was a former Yankee that was traded which trade was it? It wasn't the Didi trade. It was the, but he was sent to the Braves for a player to be named later from the Tigers. Like, you're telling me that we couldn't have done that? Like, this team just needed another pitcher very badly, and they came up with nothing. And that is frustrating. And as good as Brian Cashman has been in building a superior lineup from top to bottom, this is a team that honestly has gotten major contributions from role players this year. And we knew that the pitching staff was going to be an issue going into this season. He has balked every chance he's had the opportunity to sign a big-time pitcher, going all the way back to Scherzer. And then in this season, offseason with Corbin, he got beat to the punch 2 years ago with Verlander and ended up losing to the Astros as a result of it. And this year, we didn't get Greinke. I agree, we probably didn't have an opportunity to get Greinke, but we're probably going to get beat by the Astros again now that they have that 1-2-3 in their rotation, because their offense is – At worst, a hair short of our team, and their pitching staff is far and away better than our pitching staff at this point. So,
not their bullpen when it's fully healthy.
Yeah, well, they added two arms to their bullpen now, so we'll see what their bullpen turned into. Point is that their team, Lunlow, doubled down and tried to make their team better for the postseason stretch. Our GM didn't do anything. That's a failure. You get an F for the trade deadline as a result of this.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Yankees would pivot away from starting pitching when guys like Robbie Ray were the jewels of the deadline. Like, that's ridiculous. Why do we need to give up top prospects for Robbie Ray, who's, I don't know, he's just not an inspiring arm in my mind. Mike Minor, there just wasn't a lot of starting pitching out there. I just don't know who the Yankee fans wanted us to get. Zach Greinke, I guess, but that wasn't on the table. So I thought Cashman would then pivot to get a bullpen arm or two. But I think he looks at some of the pitchers in the minors and some of the pitchers that are being asked for in these deals, and he's like, hey, Jonathan Loaisiga could be a good bullpen piece for us. Devi Garcia, maybe he can contribute. And then we also have him tied up for years to come. That's what I'm thinking. He looks at his AAA assets, and he says, I can piece this together. I don't want to mortgage our future for average relievers or average starters.
I get it. I don't like it. I mean, I think there's a couple of reasons why I don't like it, and some of them are stronger than others. I think that the idea that this team is going to be reinforced by guys that are coming back from the injured list is a nice idea, but it's not necessarily realistic. And I know that Yankee fans are really high on Devi Garcia right now. He's really struggled to adjust to the ball in Double A, and he's never played a single inning in Triple A. So I don't understand why people think that all of a sudden he's going to be the contributor down the stretch for the Yankees. And hey, I'd love to be wrong, but that feels to me more like wishful thinking than it feels like, you know, a realistic outcome. And maybe it happens. But again, it just feels like wishful thinking to think that Devi Garcia is going to be the savior for this team down the stretch.
But what about Dellin Betances? He's working out. He's already rehabbing. It sounds like there's good progress there. Seve is also supposedly just starting to throw off the mound. There are guys that are on the way that can be helpful here.
Dellin Betances and Severino cannot be counted on for a postseason stretch run. Neither of them has thrown an inning so far in 2019. Neither of them will throw a single inning until September, even if everything goes totally according to plan. With their rehabs, which the Yankees have been notoriously bad at predicting over the last two seasons, which we've talked about many times on this podcast. And I just don't understand why we would say, hey, that's what we're counting on. We're counting on guys who have had season-long elbow and shoulder problems. It's not like they're dealing with, you know, a leg problem or something that doesn't affect pitching. Or, you know, what was the weird injury earlier this year to Blake Snell where he dropped a piece of granite in the shower on his toe, right? I might have a little bit more confidence if I dropped a piece of granite on my toe in the shower. But instead, we're talking about serious elbow and shoulder problems. I don't know why that is what we're supposed to be counting on for a team that can hit the hell out of the ball and clearly has an opportunity to go deep in the playoffs.
Yeah, I just think that the Yankees do have some help coming. They'll get Giancarlo Stanton back as well. Gary Sanchez, there's going to be a lot of additions that, you know, this team looks like it's poised to win the division. I don't want to say it's a given, but they are in a very good spot to win this division. So this trade deadline was about strengthening your postseason chances. If the Yankees are fully healthy, they can beat anyone in the postseason. I know the Astros just got better, but I still think head-to-head, the Yankees are a better team.
Based on what? I mean, I just don't understand that calculus at all.
They have a significantly better offense. I think you could argue they have a better defense. And their pitching has underperformed, but they've been extremely banged up this year. The Astros have been pretty much healthy the entire year. That's the other thing. Pitchers break. Like, they've been extremely lucky that their pitchers haven't been hurt much over the last few years. But I could totally see Verlander or Greinke, 35-plus pitchers, breaking down in the second half. That stuff happens with old pitchers. So I think it's a very risky move to put all your eggs
in 35-plus. That's like saying 35-plus sometimes break up with you, so it's better not to date. I mean, yeah, of course pitchers sometimes break. But that doesn't mean that you don't need pitchers to be successful in Major League Baseball. The Yankees have this idea now in their heads that because sometimes pitchers get hurt, it's not worth paying for them unless their name is Masahiro Tanaka, which to me makes no sense.
The game is moving to bullpen, shorter starts, and the salaries have not moved in that direction. Starters are overpaid assets. That's what Cashman and the Dodgers and several teams have started to realize is like, starters are overpaid assets. Let's invest in bullpen and position players because those are much more predictable.
I'm also not convinced that the Astros' offense is that much worse than the Yankees. George Springer, Jose Altuve, Michael Brantley, Alex Bregman, Yuli Alvarez, Carlos Correa, Yuli Gurriel, Josh Reddick and Robinson Chirinos. Like that's a pretty solid top to bottom offense. Maybe the Yankees get the edge there a little bit, but they don't get the nod there by anywhere near the margin the Astros get in terms of their starting pitching, particularly in a short series.
Okay, Astros record so far this year is 69-39. The Yankees record is 68-39. The Yankees B team has played most of the first half. I mean, people forget with the lineups that we were throwing out there. The starting pitching has underperformed. We've had a ton of injuries. I think when we get fully healthy, the Yankees are a better team. The Astros have not been devastated by those types of injuries.
No. But the Yankees B team is what you're playing with in the postseason, if that's what you want to call it. If you think that's the Yankees B team is what you want to call it, that's what you're going to have. You cannot count on Giancarlo Stanton being productive. The guy
we just got Judge back, for example. Like, we just Sanchez has been out a big part of the season. Stanton the entire time. Severino, Betances, Hicks was out for most of the season. I mean, remember we had 15 guys on the IL at one point. 15 starters.
I get it.
The Astros did not deal with that type of stuff, and we have the exact same record as them.
But this team is where it is because of contributions from guys that are still going to be there down the stretch. Guys like Gio Urshela are going to continue to get at-bats in the postseason. Guys like Cameron Maben are likely to continue to get at-bats in the postseason because we cannot count on Giancarlo Stanton to be there based on the injuries that he's had. More injuries came along just yesterday earlier this afternoon with Luke Voit going to the DL with a sports hernia. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not convinced that this team is going to get much better with people returning from injuries. Miguel Andujar is not coming back. We don't know whether Severino is coming back. We don't know whether Betances is coming back. This is, despite the fact that the B team has done what it's done, this is what it is for the Yankees going forward, I think. And we're back. Apologies to the audience for the technical difficulties. We are podcasting from the road once again. I am at a hotel working off of hotel Wi-Fi, and it has not cooperated for us quite the way that we would have hoped it would. So apologies for the technical difficulties.
Mike, are you closing deals out there? Because it seems like Cashman didn't this trade deadline.
Yeah, they call me Mariano at this point, Harry. So,
Wow. Pew, pew.
Yeah, well, got to call somebody the closer because Cashman can't get anything done. So.
So your headline is Cashman blew it. Deadline, a major failure. Is that your headline from this trade deadline?
Yeah, and if I'm being super generous, the one thing I'll say is that the Yankees' big deal happened to be Edwin Encarnacion, who has been a contributor.
Thank you. You stole the words out of my mouth.
That is the charitable way that you can view this. He did make a deal. He just made it a month ago.
Because you look at the Red Sox, they did not make any deals. Andrew Cashner,
yeah, that's yep. It.
The Minnesota Twins didn't pick really anyone up. So you look at all the contenders, and not much happened. The Cleveland Indians subtracted. They traded away Trevor Bauer. The Los Angeles Dodgers, I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. The St. Louis Cardinals utility man. That's like
right.
That's a nothing trade. This is my headline, and it's the least sexy headline ever.
The Twinkies did nothing, by the way. So out of the teams that were competing in the American League, the Twins didn't do anything significant. The Red Sox didn't do anything significant. Yankees didn't do anything significant. The Indians got better, and the Astros got better. That's about it.
Yep. So my very unsexy headline, but probably a way more accurate than your doomsday tabloidy headline, is market didn't develop, prices too high, Yankees still coin flip favorites for World Series.
Well, Vegas had to move from a 3-1 favorite down to a 4-1 favorite for the World Series this year. So they have the Astros now at the odds-on favorite for the World Series at 9-4. So they pay out only a little bit better than 2-1 if you were to bet on the Astros today. So betting markets have the Astros and the Dodgers as the odds-on favorites for the World Series. The Astros having gone from 11-2 all the way to 9-4 today. So for what that's worth, the Astros improved their odds quite a bit according to Vegas today.
538 has the World Series winner as the Los Angeles Dodgers at 25%. Astros at 19% and Yankees just right there at 17%. So still neck and neck there.
Can we talk about something that that the Mets did? I know we like to talk about the Mets a lot, and I have to say, I think that what Brody tried to do was really, really smart, and it didn't work out, which I guess makes it dumb, and I guess that makes me dumb for thinking it was smart. But I mean, if you think about it in the context of the way that this market developed, right? Because like you said, a slow developing market, prices too high. I think Brody decided, with so few top end rotation arms available at the deadline this year, he had one of them that people were coveting. Stroman was one of the other ones. So he kind of artificially created a scarcity by trading for Stroman. And if he had gone out and managed to command a higher price for Syndergaard as a result of cornering the market on top end starters, I would say that that was a very smart thing to do, because otherwise they may not have gotten their asking price for Syndergaard, particularly in a situation where it was pretty obvious that Syndergaard and the team were not happy with one another. And when the team is motivated to move a player, obviously that makes it more difficult for the team to extract the high asking price from competitors.
Totally. You're basically saying that he tried to take the market hostage and he had all the starting pitching assets to trade. So go out and get one of the best available, and then you have all the pieces and you can demand the highest price.
Totally. Create a scarcity, drive the prices up even further in your favor. The thing is, he didn't trade Syndergaard. So if that was what he was trying to do, I guess it didn't work.
I mean, to me, he didn't trade Syndergaard, which I guess is okay, but not trading Zach Wheeler makes zero sense. It's an expiring contract. You are not in a race. Like, are they delusional that they're competitive this year? And if the goal is, let's go get Stroman, let's be competitive in 2020, that Zach Wheeler is not a part of that either. So to me, that's a piece you have to trade. The Mets just made no sense to me. I thought it was a really bad deadline for the Mets. It's just a team that is caught in between and doesn't know what to do.
I mean, it's a weird thing too, because there was a tweet over the weekend that the Mets may be making Edwin Diaz available at the trade deadline. And it's like, well, are they out of baseballs at Citi Field? Because he sucks. Like, you're not going to get anything back for Edwin Diaz. He's been terrible this year. So I don't know what they were expecting to get back for that guy. But to me, that was a joke, by the way. You were supposed to laugh at that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is that selling low is a really bad move. And I think that's why Cashman looked at this market and he said, oh, you guys want Esteban Florial, who's just coming back from injury. You want Clint Frazier, who's working on his defense. I think these assets long-term are worth a lot more than you guys are giving it credit for. And I'm not going to just give these guys away because they're having a bad couple months.
I have a question for you. This is looking probably too far forward, but if Miguel Andujar went to do some winter ball to rehab after he's done with this season to try to build some of his value back up, would you be interested in a Syndergaard for Andujar trade straight up?
Oh, yeah. I would be interested in that, but I don't think that was on the table this year at the deadline because Andujar is hurt.
Too far depressed, yeah.
Yeah, his value is way down because he's hurt. But yes, in a vacuum, a healthy Andujar for Syndergaard, I would be very interested in that.
Yeah.
It would probably take more.
It probably would take more than that, I would imagine.
But yeah, it's a deal at least to build around. Yeah, I'm open to trading these young assets. I don't think these guys should be untouchable. But also, I think the market's undervaluing them. These guys are really talented young players that have years of control left. I'm not going to give it up for half a year of Bumgarner or Robbie Ray or Mike Minor. Like, these guys are just not the most talented starting pitchers, and they're not available over a long period of time. I think the Yankees took a big picture approach. They're trying to win 100 games in 2023. And that's frustrating to fans because we like a quick feedback. We like to win now. We like the George Steinbrenner era of going out and trying to win now. But I think it's a savvy long-term strategy. It's a way that you build a sustainable dynasty that's always competitive. Just constantly reload. Don't give away talented young players that have a chance to be affordable, controllable assets for years to come.
I hear you, and I do get that. I guess the thing that frustrates me is that this is a team that is so much better poised to make a deep postseason run than the teams last year, the team last year rather. And last year they were willing to part with top end prospects to bring in a guy like J.A. Happ, who they re-signed in favor of paying more money to a guy like Patrick Corbin. And at some point, you just need to look at it and say, I get that you need to build the team sustainably, but there are also years where you need to double down and go for it. And the Astros seem to understand that, and the Yankees don't. As good as Brian Cashman is, I think that there are several teams that have smarter leadership than the Yankees do right now. And you know, when you have the assets and the resources available to you that you do, one World Series appearance in 17 years, at some point, that's just not good enough. So I really hope the Yankees make a World Series run this year, but it is it's about damn time is what it comes down to. It just is about damn time. And if you're not going to make moves at the deadline to try to improve your team, then you better be pretty damn confident that the team is good enough to get where you think it needs to go.
I get it. I understand the frustration. That's what a good therapist would say, right? I think the Yankees are playing the long game, and I still think they're competitive enough to win the World Series this year. So am I frustrated that they didn't add a starting pitcher or a relief pitcher? Yeah, I'm a little disappointed, but I still believe that this team is good enough to beat anyone. And I think that today you build a long-term dynasty by controlling stud young players. So I'm okay with it.
All right, Harry. I've complained with you at you enough. I really haven't complained to you. I've complained at you enough this evening. So give me some of your thoughts on Yankees Red Sox this past weekend, or Yankees Red Sox this coming weekend, as the Yankees look to bury the Red Sox once and for all at home in the Bronx this weekend.
Yeah, well, I think this is a good point, because the last 10 days have been not particularly good for the Yankees. And I think that's part of the frustration that Yankee fans are feeling with this deadline result, is they lost 3 of 4 to the Red Sox last weekend. Their starting pitching looked awful. I mean, they had historically one of the worst weeks in starting pitching history. Katie Sharp had some good stats on that. I should look up, but it was literally the most earned runs given up by starters in a 7-day period in MLB history, which is pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, the Yankees have not played well over the last 10 days. The Luke Voit injury today is a little concerning. Looks like he has a sports hernia. He was put on the IL. And they're saying they have to reevaluate him after a few days. He could be a day-to-day situation, or he might need to sit down and have surgery and sit down for about 6 weeks. So that would be a big loss, because, you know, he's a thumper in the middle of that lineup. He's had a really good year. So, yeah, there's, you know, Gary Sanchez also gets hurt, gets put on the IL again. So it's been a rough 10 days for the Yankees. And that kind of contributes to the pain, the frustration that Yankee fans are feeling as a result of this deadline.
Fair enough. You want to do a Yankee moment and get out of here?
Yeah, talk to me.
Okay, so my Yankees story. This past weekend, I went to Yankees Red Sox at Fenway, and we ran into a real masshole sitting in the seats up in front of us. So guy is, you know, pretty typical, right? Big dude, bigger guy, just chirping everybody, being pretty nasty to Yankee fans in the stands, and things kind of come to a head in the fifth inning. He's yelled at a Yankee fan who was cheering on some of the guys on the team. And this was just after the Yankees had blown the game open. I think it was like 7-2 or something. The guy sitting in front of us just starts cussing out the Yankee fan. This isn't your house. This is my house. All the kind of nonsense, right? So somebody complains because their kid's in the stands. The guy's using really bad language. Ushers come down. They try to calm down the whole thing. And, you know, they both apologize, agree to be nice to each other. And then, so my father-in-law says to the guy, because he's been really, despite the fact that he's dumb as rocks, he's been really nice to us throughout the game. He leans down and he says, "So, have you ever been thrown out of a game before?" The guy goes, "Oh, yeah, all the time." And he goes, "Typically around the seventh or eighth inning." he then pulls up his phone and starts showing us videos of security guards at Fenway and telling us about the ones to watch out for, the guys that you got to be really careful.
Oh, my God.
The inning ends. A couple people leave. He decides to move down. So he moves down to like the first row behind the dugout. Sure enough, eighth inning rolls around. He's been harassing Luke Voit in the dugout, and the ushers come down. They're like, "You're done, buddy." And so they walk him out, and he kind of shrugs. He's like, "That's all right. I really only like watching the first seven innings anyway." And that was my Yankee moment at Fenway this past weekend.
Oh, man. That's a good one. That is good. Typical Red Sox fan, sounds like. I'm sorry you have to interact with them so often.
It was terrible. It was terrible.
But what were you wearing in this?
I was wearing a navy T-shirt and a Yankees hat. Kind of understated, but
understated. Okay, that's fair. So I think trying to remember some of the details of the story because I was pretty young, but it was 1999. John Rocker had just made some rather controversial statements in a Sports Illustrated article about New York, specifically that it was full of Asians and gays, in his words. And New Yorkers obviously didn't take too kindly to that. And
pregnant teenagers, if I'm not mistaken, as well, right?
Pregnant teenagers, yeah. He was a crazy dude. He was a really good pitcher that year. People forget. He had a wicked slider, really good sinker, and he was pretty much unhittable that year. He was a legit closer for the Atlanta Braves. And when the Yankees met in the 1999 World Series, one of my earliest World Series memories was having him come out of the bullpen and the entire stadium in this uproarious, beautiful kind of just like everyone, it was in solidarity. Asshole. And turns around and he could feel it. He like kind of looked towards the crowd and kind of gave a moment of respect, like, okay, I get it. I probably deserve that. The game that I was at was the game that Chad Curtis hit the walk-off home run. Another asshole, by the way, was on the Yankees.
Yeah, what came out about him? He was like a wife beater or something. Something really bad happened.
It was bad. It was I don't remember the details. I think it was like sexual misconduct. I don't know if he went to prison for 15 years for it or something like that.
Oh, yeah. His mugshot comes right up when you Google him.
Yeah, it is not good. I don't remember the exact details, but it's criminal, the sexual assault or something like that.
Five counts of criminal sexual misconduct ranging from misdemeanors to felonies and carrying a potential 15-year sentence.
Yep.
Yeah, not good.
Yeah. So it was game three, and Curtis hit the walk-off.
He's eligible for parole next year, so.
Really?
Good for Chad.
Oh, good. He might get out. I don't know. Supposedly he was a pretty bad guy. But I just remember that Chad Curtis home run and that great moment of it was in the bottom of the 10th of a 5-5 game. Rocker had already come in, and then Chad Curtis hits that unlikely home run to win the game in game three. It just was a great, great moment, and an early World Series moment that I'll remember forever.
Well, Harry, I'm not happy, but
are you feeling better or something?
I feel an emptiness in my soul right now. I like Brian Cashman. I just thoroughly crapped on him on this podcast, which doesn't make me feel happy. So I kind of feel worse than I did when we started because I've done some things that I don't feel good about on this podcast. I don't know, man. It's, feels bad. Was really excited for the trade deadline. I'll tell you what happened. I was in a meeting this afternoon. It was like a 3-hour meeting that went from 1 o'clock until 4 o'clock, and I couldn't look at my phone. And I was like a kid on the last day of school waiting for the meeting to be over because I was so excited to get out of that meeting and get into a car and check my phone to see what Twitter said about the trade deadline. And then I did get out of that meeting and I started scrolling through my phone and I was like, There's a lot of Ken Rosenthal tweets, but none of them are about the Yankees. I mean, maybe it happened earlier, or maybe it hasn't been announced yet, and then nothing, just nothing, nothing at all. So it was like getting coal for Christmas is really what it was like.
Yeah. You know, I like it's like getting cold for Christmas. You're so dark. I don't think it was a great deadline for the Yankees. I'm disappointed they didn't add pieces, but you know what? If we don't know what the asking prices were, if people were asking for Andujar, Frazier, Debbie Garcia, and Florial to get these guys, I'm not going to give up that much. And it really was a seller's market, and what they were selling was not great. So
it's always a seller's market at the deadline. When is it not a seller's market at the deadline?
I don't know. Sometimes there's not enough buyers. Well, there was a lot of 500 teams and a lot of buyers really. There's a lot of buyers this year. I think it's the new.
A lot of buyers this year. Not many teams bought. I mean, of the five teams in contention in the American League, only two of them really made a consequential move.
What's interesting is the August 31st deadline change. You know, there used to be waiver deadline August 31st, where if players cleared waivers, then you can make a trade. This year, July 31st is the hard deadline. That is the one and only deadline. And clearly, I think that new rule change is probably what baseball wanted, and that was less trade activity, less bad teams just dumping all their players and trying to clear payroll. It's less clear who's a contender on July 31st than August 31st. And maybe that contributed to the low volume of trades.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think Bumgarner, under the old rules, Bumgarner might have been moved in August, but now he won't be. So
yep.
It is what it is.
Yep. Well,
all right, Harry. Feel better, man. Four games against the Red Sox this weekend. There's time to feel better yet, and October is still a while away. So we've got lots of Yankees baseball still to cover this season. A disappointing trade deadline for the New York Yankees, but we'll see you next week on the Sports Animals.